Welcome to Voices from the Street, the radio ministry of the Sacramento Union Gospel Mission. You'll hear of the joys and the sorrows of those who come to the mission for help and hope and how their lives are changed for good. Here's your host, Director of the Union Gospel Mission, Pastor Robert Briggs.
It's great to be back with you this afternoon here on Voices from the Streets. I'm Pastor Briggs, and I'm the Executive Director at UGM, and we've been bringing to you over these last number of weeks testimonies and introductions to a number of our staff. And it's a joy for me today to have one of our staff members with us, Matt Biro. Matt, good to have you here.
Hello.
Good to see you, and good to have you in the studio. We're going to be thinking today about Matt's life and how the Lord has been pleased to rescue Matt, bring him from darkness into light, and more than that, to make him a very important part of our UGM team, and we're very glad for that. And so, Matt, as we get together this afternoon, tell us a little bit about, you know, where you were born, what your background was. You know, you grew up in what town, and a little bit about your early years.
So I was born in the Bay Area. I was born in Hayward. Grew up in Mountain View for probably my early life. I'd say I kind of had a typical upbringing. Both my parents were involved in my life. I have an older brother. Pretty normal life growing up. My dad had some struggles gambling and a little bit of drug issues, but beyond that, I'd say a pretty normal life growing up.
Okay, so you're a California boy.
Yeah.
And so you grew up on the east side of the Bay.
Yeah.
But I know that you don't actually support the baseball team from the east side of the Bay. You support the baseball team from the west side of the Bay.
Yeah, I'm a Giants fan and a Niners fan.
Okay, so yeah, and so I know that you're a big Giants guy and a 49ers guy, and I've even almost got you converted to liking a little bit of soccer with me, having some fun. So tell us a little bit then about your early years. You said you have a brother. Is he your older brother, younger brother?
Older brother, yeah. Okay. And then we moved to Sacramento in 1997, so when I was about 10 years old,
okay,
9 or 10, we moved up to Sacramento. Prices in the Bay Area got really expensive, and so we moved to Sacramento. I've lived in Sacramento most of my life, and mostly in the South Sacramento area,
right?
For most of my years, and probably I'd say when I was in my teenage years, got involved with some drinking. Really didn't get involved with any kind of drug use or anything until maybe I was about an adult, 20, 21. But drinking definitely was a teenager. Got exposed to that at a young age.
So schools, what school did you go to?
So high school, I went to Hiram Johnson.
Okay.
High school, main campus.
Right. Know where that is. Not too far away from where we're actually at the minute. It's not too far away. Yeah. So you went to Hiram Johnson. Did you play baseball at school?
I didn't play any sports. I was a nerd.
You were a nerd. Okay, well, that's okay. And I know you're a big numbers guy, and we can chat a little bit about that later.
Yeah.
But so you're at Hiram Johnson. You leave high school. You're obviously drawn into the direction of the alcohol issue. Was that something that started at high school, or was it after high school?
Started at high school. I was a pretty big introvert and got exposed to it just from hanging out with some people and I guess it was more of a social thing,
right?
And so it kind of brought me out of that element, and I realized that it kind of made me less of an introvert, and so I think that was my attraction to it. And so it wasn't really a big issue because it was more of a social thing, so it wasn't an all the time thing. It was more parties on the weekends with friends, and I think that was my biggest attraction to it. But yeah, it definitely was a high school thing, and so it continued on from a young age, but on a regular basis.
So you leave high school. What do you do after high school?
So originally I was supposed to go to California State, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, but didn't go there. And so I went straight to work. Worked in call centers from the age of 18 for probably about 7 or 8 years.
Okay.
Until I was 25. And that's kind of when my life really dramatically changed.
Okay, well, we can come to that in a second, but what was your interest in Cal Poly? What were you interested in studying?
So my main thing was wanting to do IT. Okay. I really enjoy computers.
Yep.
I've always got into computers from a really young age. So I wanted to do something with IT, computer engineering, programming, Video games, somewhere along that line, I really wasn't sure, but something with computers.
Okay, good. Well, I know you're a big asset to us at the Mission on Computers, and the Lord sent me along just to test your skills. I've been told that there's nothing Bill Gates has made that I can't break, so we haven't had that experience yet, but I know you're an asset to us at the Mission, and a whole host of reasons, and one of them is the fact you do help a lot with that. So you're 25, you're working in call centres, Sacramento. What happens in your life when you're in that kind of at that period? What happens?
When I was 25, my dad got sick. Realized that he had terminal cancer, and so he was put on hospice. Given a couple months to live. He passed away on the 1st of December, and then my mom, who had cancer previously, about 5 years prior to that, her cancer came back, and then she passed away on the 12th of December, so within 2 weeks of my dad.
Wow.
So just back to back, and that was, my mom was definitely the backbone of our family, and especially for me, but I'd also say my brother as well, but that was just really hard for me to deal with.
So you were living at home when both your parents died?
No, I was living with my girlfriend at the time.
Okay.
We were outside the house, but it was just
massive loss. I mean, losing one parent is hard, losing two parents is even more difficult, losing them within a 2 week spell. I think for many of us who've never gone through that, it's almost an incomprehensible devastation and loss. Looking back on it now, Matt, you know, and one of the things I know from my pastoral ministry and even working at the Mission with the Men is that very often a significant trauma like that, we use that word trauma, devastation or terrible experience, difficult providence, painful providence. Looking back on it now, Matt, a number of years later, you can see that it was just an overwhelming experience of sorrow and sadness and loss. And even though you had a relationship with a young woman, nevertheless, the impact of that, what was significant on your life?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what happened and how things unfolded after that.
So after that happened, definitely I started to drink heavily. And I'd say even prior to that, just dealing with my dad, I was helping take him to a lot of appointments. The drinking started to start before that, just because dealing with it was getting a lot, trying to go to work and balance it. And then I lost my job prior to that. But losing my mom, and just both of them back to back, I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't know how to deal with it.
Right. Very often that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't want to address it.
Right.
And so I started to drink heavily. And yeah. The months after that, even just a couple weeks later, my girlfriend at the time, she found out she was pregnant. So there was supposed to be some joy there, but there was also a lot of sorrow because my parents weren't going to ever see that. And so I think, again, just I heavily started drinking to not deal with it.
Right.
And months after that, it just continued to develop into an addiction. Mm. And so...
Yeah, I mean, the reality, grief is a reality, isn't it? And I think that in our culture, we don't often want to talk about grief because it's a painful reality, and we tend to want to mask it, or we want to deny it, or we want to suppress it. Often then what will happen is we'll turn to something for an escape.
Yeah.
And in your case, obviously, it was alcohol, and that turning to that for the escape, it then became an addiction.
Yeah.
And was there much religious background in your home life, Matt, growing up, in terms of a consciousness of God and any connection with Christian things, or how would you describe it?
None at all. So My parents never talked about God, nothing against it. It was never mentioned. We never went to church, not even on major holidays.
Right.
We were just kind of left to make our own decisions.
Right.
And my decision, being kind of a nerd, was if I can't see it, if I can't touch it, I don't believe in it. So I definitely went down the road of an atheistic view. And I was definitely open to debating it. And so I had friends who were very devout. I had a really close Catholic friend. And so I was always kind of open to discussing things. But again, just no religious affiliation. And I think that was definitely had an impact with me dealing with the grief, is not being able to handle it.
Right.
It made it harder for me.
Right. So coming to terms with the, what does this mean? Why has this happened? How do I react to this tragedy in my life? My parents are gone. Here I am. What's the point? why am I here? All of those kind of questions might start to become particularly relevant.
Yes.
When you're now thrust into the dark valley that you were thrust into as a young man, losing your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so not having the moorings, not having the reference points of Christianity at that point, you're turning to what you know, which is alcohol for comfort, maybe your girlfriend, maybe the prospect of a newborn. But nevertheless, as we know now, as you've learned, these things are temporal.
Yeah.
And they don't ultimately address the deep needs of the human heart at the best of times, never mind in your experience this was the worst of times.
Yeah
so you find yourself over a period of what, a couple of years, becoming more addicted to alcohol to the point you became what you would regard as really actually an alcoholic.
Yeah, so it definitely before I ever ended up at the mission, it was a period of 7 years, but I'd say the alcoholism probably took a couple of years for me to really realize I was an alcoholic. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years before I started having my first real wake-up calls and withdrawal symptoms, where I ended up in the hospital from having serious withdrawal issues. I had a seizure at one point where I stopped drinking, and I actually had a seizure from going into withdrawals. From just stopping drinking, and that was a big wake-up call.
Wow.
But I just continued to struggle with stopping. I tried various things. I tried AA, I tried medication, and just continued to return to alcohol. Struggling with it, didn't really know how to get away from it.
What kind of impact did it have on your relationship with your girlfriend and your ability to work and all of that? How was that at that time?
So working was an on and off thing. I didn't work for the first couple of years after my parents passed away. It was hard for me to get back to that. When I did, jobs were very short held because I would quickly, once I start getting paychecks, quickly went back to drinking heavily and then ending up in the hospital or binging and just forgetting about work or not caring. I would be able to get work again, but again, it was always short lived. My relationship soured pretty quickly. We still stayed together for a while, but I could tell that the relationship was not there anymore. And for a while we stayed together for our son, but again, we both knew the relationship was not there, and then eventually we separated. It definitely the alcohol, and slowly it developed into drug use as well. So, it definitely went down even a darker path.
Right. So you're in a difficult place, a very difficult place. Tell us then how it led to you ending up, because you actually do end up coming to the Union Gospel Mission, not as you are now, a very respected and important staff member, but you came initially to get help.
Yeah.
How did that happen? What was the circumstances of that?
I did end up somewhere else first, where I heard the gospel for the first time, but really didn't get discipled, didn't know to go to church, and slowly went back into my drinking and, didn't really understand what it meant to walk with God. And so when I relapsed again, I actually ended up in the hospital. They sent me to a mental health hospital, Sierra Vista, put me on a 14-day hold. They truly didn't want to release me unless I had somewhere to go. And so they were suggesting I go to the Union Gospel Mission because they were a Christian-based place and they knew I believed in God. And they knew they had a program. Plus, if I couldn't get in the program, they also knew they had a shelter. So they kind of were, they knew if I couldn't get in there, there was a safe place for me to go. Because they were afraid that if I didn't have somewhere to go, I would end up back in the hospital. And when I ended up in the hospital, I pretty much had a lot of drugs in my system, plus a very high alcohol content. So they were very concerned for my safety. So that's what led me to the Union Gospel Mission. And the moment I ended up there, it really was like a light clicked on. The discipleship that I got at the mission from the chaplains was, it truly was enlightening. I was being led down the right path. I met a lot of staff members who had gone through the program, and it finally was like seeing that light at the end of the tunnel. This is what I've been looking for. How do I do what you guys have?
Right.
And so I was so thankful to be there.
So do you think, looking back, Matt, you know, the first encounter with the gospel at the other place that you got help and then coming to the mission, do you think that you were converted back then, or do you think it was actually in the UGM that you became an actual Christian? When you look back, when do you think you actually came into the kingdom and you believed in Christ for the savingly for the first time?
So I do believe that I believed savingly prior to that, because prior to coming to the mission, because when I first heard the gospel, I did feel that change. And when I left, when I drank, even prior to going to drinking, I felt convicted that I was going to the liquor store to buy a bottle of alcohol. I felt convicted when I was walking home to drink the bottle of alcohol. I felt terrible because I knew what I was going to be doing. And it wasn't like before. Before, I couldn't care less that I was drinking. I would proclaim that I was an alcoholic, almost boasting about it. But again, I also was not fully understanding what that meant. So maybe, again, not really fully in the right reference of what it meant to be Christian. And I think that's where the place I was at didn't disciple me in a way and teach me in a way what that meant. And I think that's where the lack of being in a church, where that missing aspect was. Being at the mission, though it wasn't a church, they pointed me in that direction, and the chaplains were able to help me during my time there understand what that means. And then that aspect of, after the program, getting connected with a church helps to further my walk and fully understand what it means to walk with Christ, what that living that life of repentance means. Because I certainly had my understanding was, well, if I'm living this way in sin, I can't come back to Christ until I'm out of sin. And that was definitely a misunderstanding.
Yeah, I think you highlight a couple of really important points regarding the whole matter of the church's Great Commission, and that is that the idea that it's just about getting people to make decisions for Jesus is a false notion. We want people to be converted to Christ. The conversion happens when the gospel is brought to bear on the heart. Even though you may not understand all the aspects that are involved, you definitely come to realize there's a God, you're a sinner, Christ is the only one who can redeem you and reconcile you to God, and you need to believe and repent. Now, there's so much more to learn after that to get you steady and maturing in the gospel, and to get matured as a Christian. And that's where at the mission, the Union Gospel Mission, our whole approach to discipleship and evangelism and the work of the gospel is not only to see the men come to faith, but to see the men grow in faith, move forward, and live lives that are fruitful for the glory of God. So you come into the mission, you begin to learn these things. I'm trying to remember my first encounter with you. Do you remember me coming into the mission, or do you remember me because you came to Emmanuel? I don't remember.
So you probably were there the second week I was there, because I remember this funny Scottish guy being there on a Friday morning, and I thought that was the weirdest thing for me being in the program. But it's funny how God's providence works, and you're my pastor now. and my boss.
And you're thinking Scottish accent now, don't you? That's interesting, Matt.
But
I don't have a recollection of that specific moment. I know that you ended up coming to IBC, and then it was me that baptized you, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And what was the date, Matt? Do you remember?
The baptism?
Yeah.
June, I can't remember.
So it's an anniversary coming up. We're almost at an anniversary.
It was in June, yeah.
I can't remember. Look it back. Yeah.
But
you've been such an encouragement to me, Matt. You know, as I've watched you grow and get to know you and see how the Lord has turned your whole life around by his grace, and see your hunger for the word and your desire to be faithful and to want to serve Christ, you're such an encouragement to me as a pastor. I mean, in many ways, you are everything I want to see in the work of the gospel in a man. And that doesn't mean you're perfect, I know that, but to me, watching your life transform and change has been quite remarkable. You ended up coming to Emmanuel, where I'm pastor, you're now a church member there, of course, through the connections with the mission.
Yes.
And you start to come there, you get out of the program, you show what I would regard a real aptitude for learning in general, but particularly the field you really enjoy, which is your accounting and your business and all of that. And of course, now you're a major part of our finance department and our HR department and our IT and anything else we can throw at you, Matt, when we can get you to do it, you know. And you're also helping us right now in our Redemption House, although we're hoping we can get a full-time residential chaplain, because I know that you would like to have your own place and do all that, but you've been really helpful to us in regards to that. As you look back, Matt, in the way the Lord has dealt with your life over, what, 5, 6, 7 years now? What would you say have been some of the key aspects of the mission helping you to understand the gospel and then live according to the gospel?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, just understanding repentance, understanding the importance of a church, being part of a church and a healthy church, being a member. But I think one aspect for me at the mission is serving. You know, one thing that really stuck out to me and was really important was I had such a life of selfishness, and coming to the mission, there's so many areas at the mission to serve others and others that are in need, that you start to get a purpose in your life again, that I had such a life of taking. Now I get to give back to others who really are in need. You know, and it's the homeless guests that are on the street, but also, you know, our fellow men in the program, the staff members, women coming to visit, you know, so many different people that are, you know, there to serve. And that's part of what Christ did in his ministry. And I think that was one of the biggest things that played a role, you know, had a big role in my transformation, and, you know, and has still, you know, in my walk. And I think that is really important and what the mission does.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that's very true too, that, you know, we live in a day when many who profess Christ don't realize that in actual fact, the Christian life is a life of self-denial. That's what Christ calls us to. It calls us to love God and love our neighbor. It calls us to serve others. And I think that is one of the things I love about the mission, is the fact that when God saves the men who are in the program coming through, he gives them a heart, not only for him, but a heart to give back and serve others. And one of the great encouragements to me is to have a team of servants for the glory of God. And we're all servants, Matt. You know, we all serve in different ways. But if the Christian life is not directing you to be serving others, you do have to question, has the Spirit of the Lord truly come into your life and caused you to die to yourself and to live to the Lord? And I think you're a great example of that, Matt, for us. And one of the examples to us of what we want to see happen in the mission, where God saves a young man or an older man, delivers him from his addictions, brings him to new life in Jesus Christ, and gives him a heart for God to serve the Lord in whatever capacity, whether he stays on our campus and gives back at the mission, or whether he gets into another sphere of service. And of course, one of the main things we emphasize is the mission's not an end in itself. It's an end towards getting men into churches to serve the Lord and to do the work of the gospel. And I think that's, you know, one of the great lacks in our today, in the church today. There's too much Lone Ranger kind of Christianity. We need to be working together in churches, serving one another. And at the mission, we're on the front line to reach the folks in Sacramento, and we rejoice in that. And so one of the great encouragements for us at UGM is that we are reaching the least, the last, and the lost on the streets of Sacramento. You've been listening to the testimony of Matt Biro, one of our staff members. Matt's a dear brother, a great young man, and we're very thankful to God, Matt, for all that you do at the mission, and we're looking forward to hopefully many more years of serving with you.
Thank you.
And you've been listening this afternoon to Pastor Robert Briggs, the Union Gospel Mission Executive Director, as we speak to you about the reaching the least, the last, and the lost in Sacramento. We want to thank you for listening, and we look forward to being with you again on another edition of Voices from the Streets.
You've been listening to Voices from the Street, the radio ministry of the Sacramento Union Gospel Mission. If you're interested in learning more about the work of the mission and how to support them, please visit ugmsac.com or call 916-427-3268. Thank you so much for listening. Please join us again next week at the same time for Voices from the Street.